Revelation through conversation.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com, and do appreciate you for sticking with us. Now, we got all kinds of greasy and got into the weeds regarding the Ghislaine Maxwell. See, I'm being good. Ghislaine Maxwell and Epstein saga and what's unfolding and all the updates and all that. And you might have thought I would have talked about that with the second hour guy, Pierce Redman. No. Not going to do it. I'm going to leave it wide open for Pierce to go in whatever direction he wants. And we did talk for about a minute to figure out what to do here on this hour. and that's what we're going to do. And you're going to find out what that is real soon. Want to tell you, though, that tomorrow night, thankfully, I've got author Larry Hancock is going to show up and talk about his book, Creating Chaos. But not until we get a report directly from our lone listener in the Ukraine, who is going to tell us what the circumstance looks like to the civilians in Ukraine now. So we're going to hear from our buddy Amir over there and get an update on what's actually happening, since there is a bit of focus on it, but not a lot of detail, a lot of speculation, a lot of discussion about what it is Putin is doing. So why not bring on the author of Creating Chaos, who wrote the book a little ahead of the trend regarding Putin, and an eyewitness to what's actually happening in his homeland, which you don't see on a mainstream show, do you? Anyway, Pierce Redman, how you doing, my brother? PorkinsPolicyReview.com, that is your website. I have no idea what it is you've been putting out lately. I know you've been busy with your day job. I know you were busy, you got engaged. I know the new year, the holidays, everything came and went, but man, it's Tuesday. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing very well, Chuck. Unfortunately, I was just sort of lamenting the fact that I haven't posted anything on my site in, I want to say, months, but I don't have an exact figure. Not a lot been going on there. I've just been... Yeah, just sort of busy, bit sort of scatterbrained. I'm staring right now at a little post-it I have next to my computer. The two top things: one is to text back Aaron, who had texted me over the weekend. I never even responded. And then underneath that is to email Christoph, who I was supposed to be chatting with, just catching up with over the holidays, and it just I never got around to it. So
let's just clarify. Aaron is Aaron Franz, who is the host of the Age of Transitions here on Ocelli.com, the author of Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, co-host of Uncle the Broadcast, that guy. And Christoph, he's a co-host of yours on a little project. What is that called again?
Porkin's Great Game.
Ah, I knew the answer to that. I just wanted you to say it. Anyway, Porkin's Great Game, which has, survived many a year, but maybe hasn't been as prolific as of late as it used to be, right?
That's true. I don't see the prospects of that coming back anytime soon, but Christoph and I do keep in contact. In spite of, I know people have all sorts of theories about the two of us, but we do keep in contact, I will be, just talking with him at some point.
Look, I'm still trying to deal with the people that still think that maybe Joseph L. Flatley is you and you're Joseph L. Flatley. So, I mean, and it doesn't make it any better that J.G. Michael is now his co-host on Failed State Update. It just doesn't help. Although it makes perfect sense. The guys are, they're regionally close to each other. I dare say, Pierce, if I still lived in New York, you and I would probably get together a little more often and have some more common ground to share with listeners and stuff. But anyway, enough of all that. As I said, I'm just breaking your chops about it, man. But Porkin's Policy Review, there's plenty of stuff in the archives, okay? And here we are. So what is on your mind tonight? I know that, but let's see. Last time we talked, did we talk about Star Trek? Was that the Star Trek show?
Yes, I think it was.
I think so, too. And you'd only gone, I guess, through the first season, and maybe you were into the second season at the time.
Yeah, I think I was like maybe two episodes into the second season.
So here's the big question. Did any of my, oddly sort of cryptic comments to you about what was yet to come, does any of that make more sense now, where I told you there might be some time travel elements you're going to have to deal with here?
Yeah, and I mean, they to be totally honest, they weren't completely, prescient, only because I stupidly was looking on the, Star Trek Discovery Wikipedia. I was like trying to find the name of some actor or something, and of course I went a little bit too far, as many people do when you're sort of like scrolling through TV show, and I did see something about time travel or that the fourth season, I think it's the fourth, is it the fourth season or third season, like jumps forward, hundreds of years into the future, I guess, spoiler alert,
right?
I was pleasantly surprised how much I enjoyed that like jump forward in time. I usually find like time travel stuff to be really annoying. I actually kind of just hate, for the most part, those sort of episodes in Star Trek in general, although many of those are when they go back in time, and I just always like find that really annoying.
Remember I told you that I have often found the time travel thing really annoying. Like, even though Deep Space Nine used to be and may still be your favorite incarnation of Star Trek, I found their time travel stuff really, really annoying. I mean, it was kind of cute for a minute that they end up going back, when the Tribbles are invading original series Enterprise.
That episode I do like, but because it's kind of wacky.
But the whole thing with, now we're inserting them in that really ridiculous looking brawl with the Klingons and everything. I mean, come on. Yeah. It was like, I'm sure Worf didn't stick out like a sore thumb somewhere. Like, come on. Really? Anyway, I'm sorry. I apologize. But I'm just saying, it's very strange the way that they had done other time travel, especially when they tried to bring them back to what would have been contemporary Earth, right, at different times. And they did this during every series, it seemed like. In the 60s, they went back to, early astronauts and interfering with, test pilots and... Mm. And of course, famously in the movie series, they go back to retrieve some humpback whales.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's true. Like, I always found it, like, disappointing, all that stuff. I mean, I know everybody else is like, look, it's Star Trek people in, like, our timeline. And it's like, yeah, you know what, though? No, I'm not digging it. I mean, I did like when Enterprise went to, like, Nazi Germany. Like, the Nazi Germany world that was Earth, I found that interesting. where they have, I want to try and think of the actor's name that was there. It was some guy that is very common in like gangster movies and everything, and it had been on The Sopranos, and they made him sort of like the Italian street tough, resisting the Nazis.
Right.
And I kind of dug that one, because it was like this warped timeline from the past because of the temporal Cold War that was introduced there in the Enterprise series. Like, I kind of liked that, but almost every time they would go back into the past, it was like, oh God, here we go again.
Yeah, always.
When they brought like in Generations, when they brought Picard back to get together with William Shatner. I mean, which, by the way, do you know they made a miniseries out of William Shatner's space experience now? There's like a documentary
on Amazon?
Series. Yes, of course.
Yeah, I did. Well, one of my other favorite shows and sort of franchises, which I've mentioned many times on my show, certainly, The Expanse, mm-hmm. Which is currently, or it's now ended. It was on Amazon, and I'm not really sure. I think it was maybe a variety of reasons, but this particular season was, like, extremely short. There were only, like, I think it's just 6 episodes. Mm-hmm. And there was, I had read somewhere that, you know, it was, like, budgetary things. And this is, like, Amazon's biggest show. The final book in the series just came out, Leviathan Falls. There's a new video game based on the series that Telltale Games is making. It's like a massive, you know, I just like don't believe that it's like a budgetary thing, but they evidently did have the budget to send William Shatner up into space and make an infomercial,
of course,
for Amazon, you know, which is this Shatner in space documentary. So,
well, why,
I guess they could find the money for that.
Well, why let a good PR stunt only go to one wastebasket? I mean, let's think about it. You know, it's just all right. I'll leave that there. Let's get into Discovery though, and what it is you discovered by watching Discovery. Because to me, I was already caught up on this when I was talking to you, and I think there was like one episode, and I told you, you know, because you said. And a little disclosure here. You don't mind if I go personal here about how it is this got started, right?
No, no.
Okay, so basically Pierce said to me, look, I went on to Paramount, or they call it CBS All Access now, but when I signed up for it, it was Paramount. And he says, I went on there and I got this, you know, this one thing I wanted to watch, and now I'm kind of irritated. There's nothing else on it. And I said, yeah, but every Star Trek is on this, Pierce. And he goes, yeah, but I've seen them all. I'm like, oh, well, so you've seen all of Discovery. Well, it's just another new series. I said, look, I'm telling you now, this is worth what you paid for it. And I was just trying to encourage you, since you paid for 1 month, go watch Discovery. You'll get your money's worth out of it one way or another. Mm. And I told you how happy I was with this series. It is, in my estimation, I hate to say this, but at this point, despite the fact that there is some political correctness built into it that's a little odd for me to appreciate, and other things going on here that maybe, like, I don't really like the lead in the series, stuff like that. I don't like her as an actress. I mean, I didn't like her in Walking Dead. I don't like her now. Okay. She's not very good in my mind. And I can't get over that. And all that stuff, it doesn't matter. I'm telling you now, I think this is my favorite Star Trek series.
Yeah, I would actually agree. I actually think that I like Burnham. I like the actress that plays Burnham. I think it's I can see why you find her annoying or sort of difficult to get over. I mean, you know. And I think it's her name. I want to just pull it up because I feel like the last time we kept forgetting. Sonequa Martin-Green.
I hope I'm
pronouncing that correct.
If not, but, it's a very close approximation, I'm sure. And here's the thing. I like
good.
The character.
I mean, I think that, like, I think that by season 4, her character grows enough that I think if you were on the fence about it, you can, you know, you can kind of get into Burnham. Mm-hmm. And I like that she doesn't. I like the kind of like back in where you think she's going to be the captain, and then clearly everything kind of falls apart in like the, you know, episode 2 of the series for her.
Okay,
her sort of trajectory to where, you know, where the current season is sort of at like a mid-season break. You know, I like where she is. I mean, she's probably by, you know. By most estimations of the series, I mean, she's like the least sort of like experienced captain. She's probably I would, you know, I love her character, but I don't know if I would necessarily like want her to be my captain. You know, if we were picking, you know, captain. I mean, in some ways, I think Saru is a little bit more capable at times.
Although
he's kind of fluctuated as well.
See, but I like the Saru character. Didn't think I was gonna. And I'll tell you that my opinion has changed of the you know, of the Michael character from the beginning, I found her intolerable. She's now tolerable. So she's graduated from... I still can't get over it. It's just, I don't know. The character, I was uncomfortable with the arc, but I've settled on it. It's okay now. But still, her as an actress, I don't know. She's just not good. To me. But despite that, and despite some of the other strangeness where, you know, we have this whole... I don't know how many times they had to go over the they-them issue with the gender-neutral character and all that. I mean, it's like, I know that that is commensurate with the Star Trek universe.
Because I know I remember when you were saying, you know, there's some things that you just found, you know, they kind of like hit the nail on the head a little bit too much. And I certainly felt that as well, you know, with the that particular storyline. Let me say though, I like the trans character on the show, Adira, right?
I think that's her name.
I did not mind that at all. It was like one line where Adira says, "Oh, I prefer they," or something, you know, and that was it. I actually find Adira's boyfriend Gray to be the most irritating character, and I'm glad that they've like kind of written him out, hopefully. I found that to be sort of like too over the top. Like, that to me felt dated in the sense that, like, I know a million, I've met so many Grays, you know, in my you know, lifetime, especially working in theater and stuff like that. I mean, I found that aspect to be kind of like too sort of like on the nose.
Well,
this,
But the other problem here to me is not necessarily just about the gender neutral pronouns or that. They really disturbed the Trill. Okay, this is my biggest issue. They really disturbed the canon regarding the Trill here. Okay, and with this character, which already had a unique basis for study when it came to psychology, you didn't need to add this to the Trill. You know, if you wanted to make an exposition about the concept of, you know, the non-binary gender, which they've already done very subtly in the past, honestly, you know, a bunch of different ways. I don't think they needed to go to the Trill for this. This is what the problem is to me. It really screws with the Trill, and I don't like it for that reason alone. And did they write him out or did they not? I think that that's an open possibility now by the time you get to the point at which they're on a break now. You know, they rehabilitated this disembodied Gray to now have a corporeal existence again, right? So the possibility exists. What is also fascinating is that there's going to be the spinoff with the Pike thing, and if you think about that, I'm excited for that. But
definitely.
It's just I don't like how they had to do that to the Trill. I don't think that was necessary. Is all.
But
I'm
do
saying.
You think that because they're the character in this case doesn't identify as male or female, or because it's just because Adira is human?
No, my problem is not that Adira is human, because it's happened before. That doesn't mess with the canon. What does mess with the canon is that you've got this odd psychodynamic relationship between the Trill symbiote and the host, which is, you know, unique in and of itself, does not require these added pieces to overcomplicate. Because now, you know, you've taken something that's already extremely complex and added another level of complexity to it, which makes it unrelatable, which sort of defeats the purpose of trying to insert the dynamics that could be available. So to me, this should have gone this kind of storyline where you have gender neutrality. It should have gone to either, if you want to make it quite relatable, to at least a humanoid character that is not dependent upon this duality, as we've explored before, where you had, you know, say, the Dax character, especially in Deep Space Nine, where, right. you know, we're treated to a bit of the history there, and Ezri Dax versus Jadzia Dax versus the old man, whose name I often forget, but it doesn't matter. Point is that there is already a psychodynamic at play there that is worthy of exploration and does not require this additional complication. You could have assigned that issue to a more, less complex character with a psychodynamic issue to begin with. Because there's already this compensation and issue of integration psychologically with the individual already. You don't need to add this to it. For the viewer, I'm not saying that it wouldn't be a possibility, but I just think it's overloading this character with too many complexities that, since they're not the main focus, we really never get a fair view of all of this, right?
Right.
Because look, in and of itself, think about this for just a second. In and of itself, the fact that a Trill who has a symbiont, right, already kind of has somebody to keep them company, already kind of has companionship with this odd integration that is seemingly seamless, but also at the same time there is separation. So what would that mean as far as somebody seeking a mate? Well, it might change the dynamic a bit. Now, let's just think about biological motivation. Biological motivation, you would think, generally speaking, on the most basic level, you seek a mate for reproduction. But you also seek one for companionship. You also, et cetera, et cetera. I just think it was an unnecessary thing, and you got to write a whole book of psychology to unpack this character now.
No, I know what they were going for, and I do agree that felt the most sort of
forced.
It felt a little bit too on the nose. It does, in a way, oddly, I think it does date Star Trek, just in terms of, like, that's so, like, the current conversation going on, you know, across the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that in a lot of, you know, and I think in some kind of, like, stupid ways, it also sort of, like, you know, they don't explore it enough. It's almost like, okay, if this is, I think kind of what you were saying, if this is, like, going to be the story, it's like, then let's really explore it. They don't really, you know.
Right.
So that kind of, like, annoyed me a little bit. I also found the character to be totally useless.
Oh, yeah, useless. Absolutely useless. But also, you just hit it on the nose perfectly, where it's like, look, they couldn't explore it. It's not possible. There's not enough space there. That's the consideration. So I know maybe it sounds like I'm being hypercritical. And by the way, Rhizome got it correct. Curzon Dax is the Dax that I was forgetting to mention there.
Curzon, yes.
But
yes,
there's Curzon. More Daxes there that you discover if you watch Deep Space Nine again.
Yeah.
There was a whole council of them. Remember that?
Yeah, there's also the evil Dax that killed somebody.
Right. No, no.
Yeah, there's a lot of Daxes. Well, because, yeah. I mean, Adira has got, I mean, what? There's like five symbionts or something that Adira has, like, access to, including Gray.
Well, there's the symbiont. See, see what's wrong here already? You have the symbiont, and the symbiont has lived with these other hosts, so Adira has access to the other host's memories, basically.
Yes, that's what I mean.
And then, but you see how you just complicated that just with one shift? It's a pain in the neck. Gray doesn't belong in there. They don't need to add that to the psychodynamic to explore the core of that character and the reality. It just does a disservice to the Dax race, basically. I mean, to the
Trill
race.
The sort of you know, canon stuff, that didn't bother me as much. I mean, again, they could have just solved this by just simply having Adira meet Gray on the ship or something like that. You know, I mean, there's so many. I also think that...
See, Rizone is watching along with us this series because, again, the irritation with Gray gets worse when Gray is allowed into the very high-level decision regarding the AI.
You
right?
know, though, to
For
be
no
honest,
reason.
I was fine with that only because it's like, okay, fine. There is, like, you know, Gray is useful to the ship.
Yeah, but
and
why?
I mean, really, like, we're harping too much, I think, really, on the... I mean, it's such a small aspect of this, like, much more, like, larger, interesting show. And one thing I'll say that I think, again, they also kind of, like... I don't know, it just sort of, like, it... There's some interesting stuff, you know, with Discovery, especially in terms of, like, Anthony Rapp and Wilson Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
There are two characters and, like, actually exploring, you know, like, a serious gay relationship on Star Trek and not that stupid, like, making Sulu gay, you know, in one of the movies because the actor is,
see,
you know, happens
but,
to be gay.
But this also,
this
also brings up another ugly point of contention with the Gray character and that dynamic again, is because they've now repeated, and I don't like it when they just go, let's go back to the well again, because they brought one of those two back who was no longer corporeal in a technical sense. They brought one of them back already. Why are they, you know what I'm saying? They've gone back to that well and just said, let's throw a whole bunch of complication on top of it. I find it irritating. I find the Gray character irritating. Still, I stand by my statement. It's my favorite Star Trek so far, and it does not, it doesn't undermine the series, but it's a massive flaw in something that was so masterfully done for the most part, to my mind, right? I mean, it's just, again, if you have one nasty flaw in something that is almost perfect, I don't know, it just becomes more pronounced, and maybe that's what my problem is, really.
I just didn't think it was written all that well. I don't think they thought it through enough, and what I was saying is I think it actually kind of detracts from the interesting storyline between Stamets and his husband, which I think is actually, there's just like more there, you know what I mean? Like, both of those actors are just like much more accomplished. I think they're able to, you know, go to, you know, they're better. I mean, they're also Hugh is Wilson Cruz's character's name, Dr. Culber. I just thought that was more interesting. I could have like done it with a little bit more of that. Instead, I think they kind of got like sidetracked. And I think that they're just, like, trying to be current, which I understand, you know, like, everybody is sort of doing that. And I think that aside, it is such a minor complaint for me. Like, overall, I think that the series is great. I think the jump to the future works really well. I mean, I love the book character. I love the whole, like, Federation in shambles and kind of, like, rebuilding itself. I think that the kind of like the world that we see in the future with this like this kind of like hyper capitalism sort of like run amok and just you know, where you've got like people are like slavers and the Orion Syndicate is basically just sort of trafficking in virtually anything under the sun, and you know, and the Federation is just sort of like little hodgepodge organization at this point with like no members, and
well, see, that's one of the greatest things about this series to me is that it shows, you know, the fall of the empires, you know what I mean? Like, there is never anything that is eternal, and that is the reality of the universe, and there is always transition. You know, instead of the Orion Syndicate, you now have the chain, right? The Emerald Chain, I think they call it. And indeed, they try and maintain order, but it's clearly not what the Orion Syndicate was like. You know what I mean? And it's a full circle thing because, you know, I mean, you think back to the earlier episodes. And I mean, we have an encounter you know, Mud. You know, from Mud's
right.
Women.
Yeah,
which,
yeah, yeah.
And they managed to expand that character. A lot of stuff. Okay, so before we go any further on this, I got another question for you, because you and I talked about Tilly last time. And Tilly has certainly changed from the point in the series you were at to now. And I know Rhizone's appreciating this, because apparently he's watched it all and paid close attention. you know, and anybody who hasn't, I'm sorry. But this to me is great stuff. And I don't love supporting corporate media, but, man, Star Trek is Star Trek. I love Star Trek. I always have. Ever since I was a little kid. So it's a beautiful thing that I'm getting to enjoy something new in my adulthood that is relatable to this thing that
and,
has
and
been
it's
there.
Like well written, and it's like entertaining. I mean, I also just right. gotta just quickly the production value is phenomenal.
Yes,
I mean, I don't know if that's just like, you know, I feel like people have this like, oh, you know, Game of Thrones changed everything. Like, I don't think HBO is like. I mean, if this is the power of CBS, it's yes. unbelievable. I mean, every episode looks like a Hollywood,
like a
like
major
the,
Hollywood Hollywood production,
blockbuster.
Like a major Hollywood production.
Yeah.
Every episode,
and they're like long seasons too, or relatively long, you know, for what TV gets nowadays. I mean, I'm hoping we get at least, you know, 12 episodes.
Yeah, well, see, but that's the thing about this is that they're giving a lot here. And I appreciate it, because they could have done something where they were cutting down on the budget, and who knows what they'll do in the future, you know? I don't know how profitable right. this is for them, but I must say they have maintained the integrity of it, and in fact, it was actually a little uncomfortable for me, the production value at first, because I'm used to a couple of cut corners on my Star Trek, okay?
right.
I really... And I'm sorry, but I mean, you know, when you got, you know, women in the future that are definitely wearing 80s hairdos, you know that somebody didn't say, you know, we should work on these and that and the third thing details. And even the uniforms at that point and some of the mannerisms that were developed, say, on Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or whatever, some of those mannerisms, just like in the original series that were developed that people think are character quirks, are actually functions of cheap wardrobe decisions.
Right.
Which... Okay, I get it, and I'm willing to accept that. It was almost uncomfortable for me, the high production value on this thing, to begin with, because, first of all, you know, when you begin the series, you are earlier in the timeline than I think has almost ever been shown, at least with any regularity, and yet the technology and the appearance of the show is clearly light years ahead of what you're used to seeing from Star Trek. I'm sorry. So it's a little weird to see, you know, like the, you know, how is it that they contain a breach in the hull of the ship? You've heard about it before, but you've never seen it. Now they're showing it to you, and they're showing you some other stuff that I at first was not comfortable with even existing, because it's like, if that's the case, then, you know, when Kirk's around, you know, some years later, how come he doesn't use that? You know, like... Right. Where was that for him? But some of it gets handled, and progressively the series improves, and you get comfortable with this new and start to actually enjoy the high production value. It's you know, it's the adult Star Trek, basically.
Yeah.
From you were dealing with the kiddie version before, and you were happy with it, but this is much more adult. This is much more elaborate, and I appreciate it. And speaking of appreciation, again, I want to get to the Tilly character, unless you want to tail on to this some more, because...
No.
Tilly has changed for me a lot. I was completely like, okay, so you've introduced the nervous nerd, not necessarily, you know, prom queen, okay, into the show. I get it. I found her annoying at first. I really did, and she was kind of annoying, even to the point where she's chasing around her dead friend. I was not happy with her. But she's now come to a point where she is maybe, let me think, maybe my favorite character. And I really appreciate her. She's absolutely wonderful. And as an actress, she has pulled off a transition here, over the course of time, which does shift during I mean, the only time she was kind of silly was when she was, you know, in the actress was in the Mirror Universe. I found her a little.
But everybody in the Mirror Universe is like so over the top, and that's even like when Deep Space Nine goes there, you know, like Bashir and all of them are just like, you know, they're just sort of like maudlin almost.
It's just you're almost waiting for the twisting of the mustache, you know.
And I mean that's also true from like the very, you know, the original series where, like, you know, the Mirror Universe got, you know, they all had goatees and stuff like that.
Well, Spock had a goatee. I don't remember if they all did, but, you know, Kirk, they have the sashes and they're carrying knives, you know.
Or they have like a scar on their eye, something like that.
Well, you know, if I want to take command, I'll just kill you. You know, just you can't imagine anything would function if that's constantly the way it works. But it was just over the top. You're right. But and so there I was still in the Disturbed kind of category with her. And I was kind of like, oh, my God, the over the top Tilly is ridiculous. But as the series has gone on, I think she's done a hell of a job, and also not the main featured actress all the time. And I've grown an appreciation for her. I really have. So I got to say that, and I think you had said that maybe she was your favorite character to begin with.
I was definitely an early Tilly supporter. I just found her like really funny. And I actually thought that they did something a little bit different, and I think it was easy to like kind of like look at Tilly initially and be like, oh, here we go, this is a sort of like, you know, dorky science, you know, person. But I actually feel like they made Tilly a little bit more like, yes, she was like nervous, but like there's that episode like really early on where they're like going, where I think it's where Mud is trying to blow up the ship. Right, so he keeps using that time travel thing, and at the party, Tilly actually seemed like you'd want to hang out with her at a party, you know, and she was like, you know, she's like, you know, wanted to get, you know, drinks and, you know, dance, and she seemed. I think there's something about Tilly that there is something that she is like sure of herself, like she knows who she is, you know, and she kind of knows what she wants to do. In the fourth season, obviously, we see her kind of struggling, I think, but she, you know, she's willing to go outside of her comfort zone, as she puts it,
right,
throughout like multiple episodes.
I just
really like that about her.
I find her really believable, even when she's you know, dealing with the cadets. I find her really believable. Like, that's exactly how that character would try to handle it, and still she finds a way to take care of business, which, you know, that's the thing, is that you almost thought she was like stumbling into stuff. You know what I mean? To begin with, it was like, oh, okay, well, you accidented yourself out of a bad spot here. I mean, that was the feel I was getting, even though that's not the way they wrote her. Now, today, I would not say that. I think that there's a multi-layered thing that goes on here where you have the fidgety, you know, awkward, outward projection, but at the same time, highly intelligent, highly strong, has the ability to empathize, not necessarily have to make the cruelest of decisions usually, but when it comes down to it, get the job done. So I appreciate that about that character, and did not expect that to emerge from the package we were delivered in the first place. So, you know, and I got to say, that's another thing, is that this is a Star Trek where every twist and turn is not as easily telegraphed as in the past, which to me, again, speaks to why it is, I think it's my favorite series. I'm not sitting there going, oh no, I know what they're going to do here. You know, every single time, that doesn't happen. Sometimes it does. Like, you know, in the case of the book character and everything, you know, that's an unusual aspect of it. He's got a cat, which is funny. I mean, you know, there's some comic relief here that feels natural at this point, as the series has developed, and honestly, I'm thrilled with it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it like, especially now where they are, where it's like they can kind of do whatever they want, you know. And I think that in a lot of ways, this is like kind of, I guess in a sense, it's like sort of like what Voyager was doing, right? Because Voyager is like not the future, but they're like so, you know, they go through the, like, a wormhole or whatever, and they're, like, so far away from, you know, it's, like, kind of like, you know, Star Trek, like, the early Star Trek where they're really discovering things. But, you know, there's right. a little bit of that with this where it's, like, they're so far in the future now that you can really kind of, like, go wherever they want and, you know, while still kind of maintaining the, like, core sort of, like, values and ideas of, like, Star Trek and the Federation.
Right.
And also just the same kind of, like, the sort of, like, overarching, like, kind of storylines and pacing. But, yeah, I mean, they do it so well. I mean, do you think that Tilly is, you know, just going to be teaching the cadets alongside, well, my favorite cameo, David Cronenberg?
Well, see, there's the interesting thing is, again, I don't feel confident in predicting what's going to happen. Because with the DiGiorgio character, okay, we got kind of the arc we expected, but then there were little twists and turns in there that I dare say were well kept, you know, close to the vest by the writers throughout. And, you know, the change in what happens there, the commentary on, you know, and here's something you and I could get into briefly, the commentary on the greater intelligence apparatus and all of that stuff and how transhumanism might play into that and AI might play into that. That, to me, was super complex without demeaning the viewer by over-explaining it. And all of it, you know, look, there's a lot of metaphorical things in there. Now that you've enjoyed this series, I have actually gone back and watched it again to go through the metaphor, to go through what does this mean, to go through the actual art of it as well. And there's plenty to pull. There, it's not just the simple, you know, let's have a space adventure. It's not wagon train to the stars, as, you know, many people have said it was intended to be. It is way more than that, and it's just really enjoyable that it's a complex, but doesn't insist on beating you to death with its complexity most of the time. You know, the majority of the time, I felt like the thing with the Trill again was overly complex and really forced. But I don't have a lot. I don't have a list of those things to tell you about. Where it's like, come on, guys. I mean, I could tell you that there's maybe an overabundance of conveniences on occasion. Like, you know, of course we're going to deal with that weird, you know, Vulcan sect. You know, Vulcan-Romulan sect. And, yeah, somehow Michael's mother's there. You know, I mean,
yeah,
bit much.
Yeah, you know what it is? I think that the Michael's mom is just such an interesting character. That actress is great. She was in The Wire. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think they want to just have her, you know, kind of explore that. And so, I mean, I'm kind of fine with that. I mean, I'm actually really sad that Giorgio is kind of out of the series. I mean, I just, like, loved her. I loved her arc. I mean, I loved even just that whole episode was, like, hard to get through just because it was heavy and... you know, it was sort of a departure from everything else where she kind of goes back to the Terran universe and tries to save Michael. But, I mean, I love that, you know, ultimately you can't, you know, she can't really change or, like, alter what's already happened. But, you know, but, I mean, I was really sad to see her go, although I think it was, like, fitting. And I feel like there's at this point, they're so far into the future that there's definitely, like, a possibility that somehow, you know, Philippa will return again.
In some form. I think they could return that actress to the series if they
want
to.
Well, supposedly they were going to make a Section 31 spinoff show, which would have been really cool.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if that would have floated as well. Now, again, the idea that they're going to spin off the, you know, Strange New Worlds, which is the Pike Adventures.
Yeah, and I do hope that the what's his name, Vok, Ash, I hope he's in that. I was actually really sad to see him not come to the future. Michael's you know, first sort of, like, love interest. I loved that character.
And that was another thing where you had a complexity and a weirdness. See, again, it's about the psychodramas. If you would have added, you know, to the interspecies thing, and one could say that metaphorically it's the same thing. See, again, metaphorically, right, Klingons are definitely given with different mating habits than humans, aren't they? So there is a dynamic there where there are contradictions in the norms from both sides of the equation, and one could say metaphorically that's a way to explore the non-binary existence. You didn't need Gray, for God's sake. Not with the Trill. See what I mean? I'm sorry. I know I keep going back to it. But that character, yes, I appreciated that. That's for sure. And that was weird. And again, they give me a whole other, you know, look for Klingons again. And I'm like, yeah, this is all right. I mean, the weirdness, I will say the weirdness of the semi-organic warship was
right.
A bit much. But then again, we were also treated to the, you know, look, it reminds me of the days when they expanded the, you know, the what are they called? The blue guys who live on the ice planet there. That have the antennas, and they did that in Enterprise.
Andorian.
I think they're Andorians, yes. And he makes friends with the one Andorian, and that becomes a great, great story arc that keeps, you know, reemerging in Enterprise. And that expanded a character that you got to see, like, you know what, on a screen once in the original series. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that was cool. The expansion of, you know, the green slave women from the original actress that, you know, was there on the cage, right? You know, that they kept painting green, and then the cinematographer had to keep returning it back going, I'm having a hell of a time getting the green tone off your actress. You know, expansion of stuff like that has always been great. The expansion of the Klingon thing was very well done for the most part. It gets into some weird esoteric territory. Again, you can remind this for all sorts of metaphorical and symbolic imagery. And you don't have to, but you can. So, I mean, there's a lot there. I love it. I'm glad you brought that up, too. That's a great piece there that I might have actually skipped over, because really they pack a lot of story into each of these episodes, too. It's not ever like a bare bones, slow moving. Obviously, they're trying to fill space here while they fulfill their contract. You know, it's nothing like that where you watch a whole episode where nothing happens. It's just well done. The pacing, everything. Again, just the lingering on that one thing, I know, is that you didn't need to to add complexity to something that was already complex, you know? You don't need to put a hat on a hat, is what I'm saying with the Trill.
Right.
So, but look, we're actually coming down to the last, 8 minutes or so. So I want to give you an opportunity to, you know, talk about whatever else it is you want. Of course, guys, go over to PorkinsPolicyReview.com, check out his work. Plenty in the archives, even if he's not posting much lately. I'm sure at some point you'll get back to it. And obviously, do remember to post these episodes over there when you come on here. More than happy for you to share that stuff. And if ever...
Yeah, I know. I need to get on top of that again.
And if ever you decide to go do a live radio show again, I'd be more than happy to produce you if you like.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, I mean, yeah. But either way, that's not because there was any problem there or anything. It's just Pierce decided he didn't really feel like doing that once a week anymore. So that was that. Anyways... yeah, so whatever else it is you want to add in, again, now I guess because I talked again for another minute, you got about 7 or so to work with, but go right ahead.
Well, I guess to reiterate, I mean, just like how much I just really am enjoying the show. I mean, I'm kind of, I've already like written on my the calendar above my desk when the series starts up again, which I think is February 10th. You know, and it was so nice having like so many episodes to sort of go through. You know, it was like, oh, I'm never gonna run out. And then of course, you know, I binged it as so many of us do. And now I'm, you know, kind of like crawling up the walls waiting for, you know, the next episode.
Okay, so one yes or no question here. It was worth the price of admission to go ahead and watch Discovery, though. I was correct about that, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay. I mean, it was already, but I had already let you know that because I pay for the full version of it just so I don't have to deal with the commercial. Like, I didn't want to watch any commercials. So, yeah, I mean, I've upgraded to the whatever, like the $10 a month option.
I went the cheap way, just so you know. And the thing is, even though I hate commercials and ad spots, it's like because the content is so good, I'm willing to endure it, and I do.
Yeah, and so. I mean the commercials are like fairly minimal. Yeah, I mean it's not you know, if bad. People are kind of like wondering, but I think, you know, if you like just give it a shot, you're definitely just gonna kind of instantly, you know, you would have no problem spending the money to kind of pay. And again, also with the Strange New Worlds like spinoff series. I mean, I love the Pike is definitely one of my new kind of favorite captains at the moment. And I love, you know, just waiting to see how he's going to end up in his little wheelchair. If we're going to see that, if we're not going to see that, I'm not sure.
Mm.
But that'll be really interesting. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Just, you know, I'm just also really like amazed at, again, I think, you know, with aside from like our few sort of like nitpicky issues about some of the kind of like current events things, it's really amazing how this series has been able to kind of maintain this, you know, the kind of core idea that Gene Roddenberry created decades ago.
Right.
You know, I feel that the essence of that, I think it really comes across in Discovery. You know, maybe more so than some of the more you know, recent Star Trek, you know, iterations. I mean, especially like the Hollywood the new Hollywood films that have come out, which I guess are, I mean, they're fine, they're entertaining, but and I haven't seen like Picard or anything like that, so I'm not sure. But you know, Discovery really feels like it feels like something like if Gene Roddenberry had lived, like this is kind of what, you know, this is where it would
what
be.
What he would have done. See, and I don't mind Picard, but it's not, it's a good series. It's solid, but it's not as good as Discovery. I'm sorry. And I appreciate seeing him, you know, back in his role and all that. The two cartoon, they developed two separate cartoon series on CBS, too.
I've seen a little bit of Lower Decks. I haven't gotten too into it, but I could see just putting it on just to have something on, you know.
Yeah, and they have this other one that's more like I don't know, CGI animation.
The Paradox or something.
Something.
Or?
Yeah. I forget what it's called, but it's like it's forgettable to me. This series is solid. I'm looking forward to seeing the next one. I agree with you. It does absolutely agree with Gene Roddenberry's vision in my mind. Speaking of that, I got a funny question for you because I actually obtained, you ever see one of those manuals that like basically explained the entire Star Trek universe that they put out?
Yeah,
in the
90s? Yeah.
Okay, so I got one recently in my hands and it reminded me of a funny story. So I want to ask you a trivia question. So load up your mind. I was arguing with somebody. They basically said to me, I said something about Star Trek, and they said, you don't know nothing about Star Trek. I'm an expert on it. I said, okay. He said, you name a trivia question, I'll know the answer, I promise you. And he plunked down this book in front of me. And I'd never seen one before, and this was a few years ago, only I never saw them when they were out in the 90s. So he plunks this thing in front of me, and he goes, go ahead and ask me a question. We'll check it in this. Okay. And I said, okay, fine. I got one. And one and done. This is all there is. Who was the first captain? What was the name of the first captain that Gene Roddenberry wrote for Star Trek? What was the first captain's name? So I'm going to ask you that question and not give you a chance to look it up and see if you can answer it.
That he wrote, like, is that not Pike from the pilot? Or is there somebody...
Okay, you just answered it like my smug friend did, except you didn't do it smugly. and my smug friend insisted, it was Pike, that's it. I said, no, sir, I guarantee you will find that the first captain of the USS Enterprise, The USS Enterprise, not the MX, blah, 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 blah. The USS Enterprise, the first captain, which was the specific of the question I forgot to mention here, was actually Captain April. And he said, no, it wasn't. I said, well, if that book's got everything in it, go to it. So he did. And you know what? It was funny as hell. When they started putting the series together, you know, for TV, and they were shooting photographs and stuff, guess who is dressed as Captain April in the photograph? Gene Roddenberry is dressed as Captain April because they didn't have an actor.
Right.
And they changed the name. The name went through a couple of different changes, but in reality, in the history of the USS Enterprise that Gene Roddenberry was imagining and creating, Captain April is the first captain. So I was correct. My smug friend was not. And I found it rather funny that the guy who possessed this very dog-eared book that had all of the existing facts on Star Trek up to the year 1999, or maybe it was 2003, or I forget where, but up to that point, you could learn the entire history, every alien race, the construction of each ship.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, these are like that. Bibles.
Yeah, like a show Bible. If you were writing for Star Trek, you had to have one of these things, actually. And then they, you know, sold them at conventions and figured out, oh, this is profitable, so they made them. right? So that's it. Captain April was actually the first captain of the USS Enterprise. So, you ever want to stump somebody who thinks they know everything about Star Trek, try that one. It may or may not work. And I had, you know, I had a fandom behind me on that one. So, and I'm not trying to shame you, Pierce. I'm just saying it's one of those weird little things.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah.
That's how deep I am into this show, just to tell you why it is I'm saying to you that this is actually, I think, the culmination of Roddenberry's vision is coming together in Discovery. I hope they don't, you know, suddenly implode as they go forward, but it's a great show. Anyway, we're just about out of time. Pierce, anything you want to say here in closing?
No, just, you know, that I'm going to download there's a bunch of Star Trek Discovery comics, so I'm just gonna download those right now when we're done. I think they're out by IDW puts them out. Just to kind of hold me over, but that's about it.
Well, you know, there's also these little short treks and stuff.
I have to watch those.
They're some of them very interesting. There are side stories. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah.
It's really great. Anyway, I know we went kind of far flung from hour one with Pierce Redman, but what the hell, man? Let's get out of the dirtiness of the news. Tomorrow night, though, we're going to get back in it. Maria Heller, James Corbett tomorrow night, and on Thursday, we're going to hear from Amir and Larry Hancock. So a lot of serious business on the rest of the week on the show. Anyway, thanks to Pierce Redman. Thanks to Addy Ads. And thank you for listening, because I am Amir Leocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.